Welcome, everybody. This is an introduction to geometric networks. Who in here is familiar with geometric networks? Okay, so you're all using them today then, most of you. All right, to my left here, sorry, right, I have...
left and right.
It was to your right on my left. I have David Crawford. He is a product engineer. He is the geometric network guru. So if you have any deep dive questions, this is your guy to go to. I can answer all the simple, higher-level ones. I'm Caitlin Johnson. I'm also a product engineer on the GeoDatabase team. I work with network such as Geometric Networks. Both of us are also on the new Utility Network project, which we'll touch at the end of this presentation. Can everybody hear me okay in the back? You're okay? Good? Okay, perfect. All right, so we presume that you have a base knowledge of the geodatabase. That includes things like feature classes, tables, subtypes, domains, attachments, editor tracking, relationship classes, the whole shebang. Since most of you are already using geometric networks, you're probably already familiar with all of those. So on the agenda today, we're going to talk about what is a geometric network and why it was created. We're going to talk about the editing experience and the analytics that go with that, otherwise known as tracings. And then we're also going to talk about validating your network. And then we'll talk about programming, performance. We'll talk about some deployment tips. And then, of course, our future plans. So what is a geometric network? Well, there's two main parts to it. We have the network that you see in a map, which is the logical network, and then the one that you have behind the scenes that's managing your connectivity. We also have features that participate in the GN. They have special capabilities that make them unique to this data set, which allow them to have special behaviors, which Dave will be demonstrating to you. So first of all, let's talk about why the geometric network was developed. Well, in the late 90s, ArcInfo had been around for a while. We saw the utility space getting more and more competitive. Thus, we decided to provide support for you guys, as well as the natural resource industry. The competitiveness, as well as the support for you guys, is what drove us to develop geometric networks. The first client for geometric networks is the desktop suite. So ArcMap and ArcCatalog were kind of birthed for the purpose of geometric networks. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the geometric network that you see in the map. Basically, what it is a bunch of connected points and lines, which rely on connectivity based on geometric coincidence, which means features must be at the same XYZ location in order to connect to each other. With geometric networks, you're able to model your assets with rules and custom features to control how things connect. All right, so we have the logical network behind the scenes. It's an index that maintains connectivity relationship between edges and junctions. Its purpose is to make things faster. By caching connectivity and attribute information, traces can read the index for pertinent information instead of having to travel down all the way down to the database to get it. That's going to save you a lot of time. Since connectivity is on the fly, this is an important time saver because while you're editing behind the scenes, we're stitching together all those points and lines. And by having that information cached, it's always hot and ready for you to leverage and get at. You cannot access the index, the logical network, through the UI, but you can access it programmatically. Through that, it optimizes queries and analytics. Finally, it maintains weights, which are a way to model the cost of traveling the network, and we'll talk about those later. All right, so now we're going to talk about features that participate in the network and how they are made custom specific to geometric networks. So they are custom in two ways. First, they define how other features can connect to it. Second, when you save a custom feature, more than just information about that specific feature is saved. So if we do a comparison between normal features and geometric network features, when you update and save a regular feature in a map, one that doesn't belong to a geometric network, it saves the changes that you made on that feature, like attributes or shape updates. It stores nothing beyond that information, When you update and save a geometric network feature, the connectivity, what they are connected to, their neighboring feature, that is also saved. So we're always aware what you're connected to. We can keep building that out. The special behavior allows us to ask network features what the neighboring feature is. We can then go ahead and ask the next neighboring, and so we kind of start a path through our network. Dave's going to demonstrate this ability later. All right, so when you are selecting a feature to represent your network asset in the real world, you should consider a few things. You should consider the shape of it. Is it a single object existing in an XY location? In that case, you should choose a point. So that would be like a transformer or a valve. If it's a linear entity that stretches, spans, across a large geographical area, like a line, you're going to use, obviously, a line class for that. First, I want to talk to you about the types of features. So we have the system maintained point feature class called orphan junctions. Their purpose is to maintain connectivity between lines. Lines must always have junctions at their endpoints. So if you don't place a user junction at the endpoint, we will place a orphan junction there just so it can maintain connectivity to the next edge. There is a very simple way to go and update, switch out that orphan junction with your user junction, and I think Dave will be demoing that as well. Otherwise, my slides will show that. So with linear features, you have two options. You have complex edges and simple edges. The difference between them is the support for mid-span connectivity. Mid-span connectivity means that resource can flow not only into the start of the feature and out, it can also be siphoned off at any point along the line. So complex edges support mid-span connectivity, simple edges do not. There we go. So here you see complex edges, that one single line there, and it has the connected edges along its mid-span, so our resources can go and flow at each one of them.
Oops. They can't see your mouse pointer, just so you know.
What?
They can't see your mouse pointer, just so you know.
Thanks, Abe. All right, and then here's the simple edges. Again, this simple graphic demonstrating that the orange ones are the simple edges, and you cannot make a mid-span connectivity to them. All right, so we have rules in the geometric network, which are going to tell our features how they're allowed to be connected. They are also going to allow us to restrict the number of features that can connect to a single feature. We have two types of rules. Rules must be defined at the subtype level. We have edge junction, which means that a particular subtype of junction can connect to a particular subtype of edge. This prevents, for example, a 6-inch valve from connecting to an 8-inch pipe. Then we have edge junction edge rules, which means that two lines can connect only if a junction of a certain subtype is present to allow them to connect. For example, if you wouldn't want a medium voltage line connecting to like a jumper and then in turn is connected to a low voltage line, you'd want the appropriate asset there to bring down your voltage level. All rules are analyzed post-process. That can be done through an experience that Dave is going to be demoing. Okay, so we also encourage you to use a geometric network if you're going to model a natural resource system such as rivers and watersheds. You could use a geometric network if you want to control custom features where you can say how they connect and you want to support mid-span connectivity and also maintain connectivity on the fly. Geometric networks are going to allow you to, again, trace pathways through your network so you can find optimal paths, calculate flow rates. Finally, you want to take into consideration information about your features. If you want to take into consideration about your features as you're tracing those pathways, like if this line is so long, then I don't want to take that path. I want to take the smallest route. again, those are weights. We'll talk about those later. But if you want to have that capability, you should use geometric networks.
Is this my demo now?
Yes. All right, I'm going to switch it over to Dave, and he's going to do creating and configuring a geometric network.
Which one? All right, everyone. So let's take a big breath after that. That was the 10-minute version of the 20 minutes worth of slides. So as Kate's described, sort of the geometric network is the way that utility spaces model flowing of resources. So obviously the question is, how do you get started? Where do you go first? The first thing you'd have to do is, one, have a feature data set, which contains in it all the feature classes that you want to participate in your geometric network. Those feature classes right now are just simple, regular feature classes that I've dumped my data into. There's nothing special about them yet, because I don't have a geometric network created. When to create a geometric network, we have two different access paths. In ArcGIS 10.1, we built a suite of geoprocessing tools. They live under the data management toolbox, under the geometric network tool set. And there's a series of tools here to allow you to create, configure, and verify the connectivity of your network as you work on it. All of these tools will work on both a file geodatabase or personal geodatabase geometric network. They would also work on a versioned enterprise geodatabase geometric network, with the obvious caveat that if you're going to start making schema changes, things like adding rules, removing rules, or adding feature classes to the network or removing empty feature classes from the network, you have to kick everyone off your system before you can do that. You can't have a bunch of people connected in an inversion environment, have a bunch of outstanding versions, and expect to be able to, for example, remove an empty feature class from a geometric network. This tool came to be because one of the common cases we ran into was people would have a feature class that they retired. They had no use for it anymore. They deleted every feature out of it. They truncated it. But every time they added that geometric network to a map, they created a version. That feature class also was in the version, was in a layer in the map, and it just created a little bit of confusion. So once you've emptied that feature class now, we allow you to remove it right out of the network. All that really does is get rid of all the custom behavior that's built up on top of that Kate was describing there. So to start, I'm just going to... this is the least thrilling of all of the three demos I'll show you today, but this one is sort of the nuts and bolts that gets you ready for the rest. So I'm just going to create a geometric network. The reason I do this sort of in tandem, first I'll open the geoprocessing tool here, and then simultaneously in my feature data set, I'm just going to right-click, go to the new, pull right, and say geometric network. The only reason I do this in tandem is so that you can see that we're not cheating you at all. The geoprocessing tool actually has every single option that you can get through the wizard experience. The wizard experience is good, it worked for a long time, but if you were in a server environment and you didn't want to install desktop to look at the UI, you had no access to it, if you just didn't like clicking through wizards, you had no way to script it, with the current GP tool, because it is Python supported and scriptable, you could write the script once to generate that geometric network, then if something happened where you had to delete the data and start over, you don't have to go back and configure your network again, you can just have a script right there ready to go. For the purpose of this demo, I just click my way through the wizard, and I'm just going to show you where things match between the two, so that you can sort of understand that all the options that are available in both places. So first, you'd enter a name of the network. We provide you a hint for the name, which is the name of your feature data set, _net. But you're welcome to get rid of that and call it whatever you want. You can call it my network, custom network. The same rules apply as anything in the geodatabase. You can't put number signs, special characters, things like that into the name. It still is an object in the geodatabase and has to adhere to all of the standard database principles of everything else. Then you get this option whether or not you want to snap features. What this really means is that during the creation of the geometric network, because we build a logical network underneath the cover, so to speak, so you have your feature space up here, and then below that you have this logical network space. Whenever you're doing traversals, you're doing it at the logical network space, although the returns are always up in feature space. But we cross that border for you so that you don't have to. What this snapping will do is that if your feature space is not quite correct, it's not
exactly coincident, the geometric network won't stitch those things together. It doesn't know that it should just assume that these things that are sort of close are the same. So what we can do is allow you to create set snapping and turn a tolerance on so that you could say, yep, I know that my data is pretty good, but things might be off a little bit. The default value in here is actually the spatial references tolerance, so it's very, very small. On this one, it's 0.0001 meters. So you'd have to have really accurate data for this thing to snap anything together. It's not like it's just going to start snapping things across the network together. However, you have to be aware of this setting because I could put 200 in here. And now 200 meters is considered equal. Well, if you have edges that are running beside each other, they're just going to start to snap together. And the end result of your network is just going to be crap. It's not going to be what you want it to be. You're really not going to like it. So for the case of this, we don't turn on snapping. You notice I leave that number there and it goes gray. It actually will get ignored, even though it's left it there. So the name of the network in the geoprocessing tool would go right here. The snapping area, instead of it being a yes-no, if you just define a tolerance here, it will use it and it will snap. That is sort of a difference between GP frameworks and wizards. There's no yes-no options. There's just if you set it, we will use it. That's different than what I'm showing here in that wizard. So now in this window, I can pick all the classes that I want to participate in my network. Remember that by putting a class into the network, we are applying custom behavior to it. So now there's other rules that are going to adhere to it throughout the system. You can't just go and try to do non-versioned editing on it if it's in an enterprise geodatabase. It's got to be edited through versioning. If you're in file geodatabase and you try to edit this one of these feature classes using custom code, then you've got to be aware that this is a geometric network class and the standard custom code editing ways won't work. You have to use special interfaces specifically for these. And then in this window, we actually give you this little button that says unavailable. And what this was for was that we had people who would say, I have a feature data set. Why can't I see one of my classes in there? I don't understand why. So we gave them this just so that you can get a hint as you're creating your network and say, oh, okay. Well, I can't create my tax parcels in this network because it's a polygon. Well, we don't support polygons. So invalid shape type is the error you get back. Annotation also is not supported. There's nothing in the network that could stitch labels together. So we just tell you it's an invalid feature type. You can still apply annotation to any class that's in a network, but the annotation itself is not in the network. It's a sort of a little understanding of things. You just have to get your head around a little bit what it actually means for something to be in the network. It means it's getting that custom behavior. Yes. So the question was, could you add streams or rivers? Yes, the geometric network is designed to model any flow of resources. I've seen people model logging operations through like the British Columbia Mountains. So they just modeled their logging paths, and then they treat the logs as resources. You can model streams and ponds and reservoirs and things like that. Talk to me after this. Your question is the fact that I named this storm network is irrelevant. It has. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You talk to me afterwards. I think your question is more in depth than you think it is. Talk to me afterwards. This page here, you'll only ever see this page in the wizard if you've ever created a network before on your data, because this is my demo data. It always has networks created and deleted off of it, which is why I get this. All it's asking is that in the geometric network, every single feature is given a status, enabled or disabled. In other words, is it traversable, is it not traversable? When I run that fine connected trace, should I be able to go through that junction or should I stop? By default, everything is created as enabled. If you create a network, disable some things, and then delete that network and recreate it, we give you the option to preserve the current state of the enabled values, or you can just say no, enable all features. On the geoprocessing pane, the location, I can't click on it right now, it's lower. I'll show it at the end of the once the wizard is done. So in this case, I'm just going to say yes, keep the status I have. And then in this little page, you get to pick sort of the type of features these are in your network. So as Kate described, we have simple junctions, we have simple edges, and we have complex edges. Complex edges is anything that's going to support that idea of mid-span connectivity. Big example of that would be like a main water line that runs down your street. When they give a new tap-off lateral for a house, they don't go cut the main in half, rip out half of it, put a new half of a main in, and then attach your lateral to it. They just drill a hole and attach the lateral. So you want to leave that main as one whole feature. It hasn't been broken up into multiple features, but you want to be able to connect the other things onto it that are drawing those resources. So in the case of this particular network, I'm just going to turn storm pipes into a complex edge and leave everything else as simple edges. Now, this menu is where we can choose to configure weights, and this is the idea of a cost of traversal or the amount of resources that can flow through your network. Usually examples of this are things like people will apply the length of their pipes as a weight. Essentially what it does is any accumulation trace as you go downstream, upstream, find path. In order for us to accumulate something, we need to know what attribute you're interested in accumulating. If you want the trace to be able to accumulate it, it's got to be registered as a weight. So that at the logical network, so again, we're in our two tiers of space here. When we're down at the logical network, we need to be able to get some of that attribution without going back to the features and asking them for it. It's very expensive to walk back and forth. So we go down into the network, do all the work there, get our accumulations, and then pass everything back up. In this example, we won't create a weight. But if I was to, all you do is you say weight, and you could give it, for example, the shape length name, assign it as a double, it adds the weight. And then the key is that on each feature class in the network, we'll try to guess at what weight field you're using, but if we guessed wrong, you can change it. And each feature class could use a different field for the same weight name. The field name and the weight name are not inexorably linked. You in this pane actually decide how they are linked. Now, so again, in this case, we're not going to create a weight. So I click Next. Finally, I get this nice little summary page, what I just created, and then I can say Finish. That's going to go and create my network. Now I get this what looks like an error. It's not really, because it has our fancy little warning tag over here, which lets you know it's just a warning. It's not really an error. Nothing's really wrong. But what happened is, as we created the network, it found things in the feature space that was added into that network to participate that were wrong or odd. Examples of this are if you have stacked junctions, we'll report an error. We will create connectivity to one of the junctions, but it's random. There's actually an algorithm to figure out which one we connect to, but it's way more complex than anything I understand. We have developers for that. Some of those are isolated features, an edge, a junction just off in no man's land that's not connected to anything. We'll identify that as a build error, because essentially we're just letting you know we found something that just doesn't seem quite right. It's not that it's going to break your data. It's not going to stop you from editing. It's not going to stop you from using the network as it is. We're just letting you know, hey, there's probably something you might want to take a look at. So, and as I described at the very bottom of this geoprocessing tool, in the advanced options, this is where you can actually set whether or not you want to preserve those enabled values. So in the wizard, it's the second pop-up window just because that's where we put it. In the GP tool, because it's an optional option, it's all the way at the bottom of the tool. So now that I have this network, we can look at the properties of it. So this, we'll just give you your sort of summary page. What was created in this network? What's in it? What does it do? One thing I didn't touch on is sources and sinks. The idea of this is anything that is a source is something that feeds into your network, whatever that resource happens to be. It could be a pumping station in water. It could be a reservoir in a storm system. It could be a big substation in electric. And then also sinks, which is anything that pulls that resource. And the reason you would set sources and sinks is to allow flow direction to happen. For the system to figure out what direction things are going, we've got to know where are your sources and what's giving resources into this network and what's pulling resources out of this network. From that, we can stitch together what direction things are going to be flowing. Without that, we're sort of at a loss. When you flip this to yes or true, all it does is add an extra field onto that feature class called ancillary role. everything by default is false. By default is false. And then you in the editor can go in and change that because there's a coded value domain we apply to it, and you can change it to source or sync or put it back to none. Connectivity is the other interesting part of this properties pane. It's the last thing I'll touch on in this part of the demo. And what this allows you to do is, so these rules, there are post-process validations, so no matter whether or not you have these rules set, it's not going to stop you from editing. But it's also, if you don't have any set, not going to give you any ability to validate that things are connected the way that they potentially should be connected. Because the geometric network is live connectivity, all just XY coincidence, if things snap, they connect. We don't know that a manhole shouldn't have snapped to that house lateral. We assumed that it would because you edited it that way. We didn't know that there shouldn't be some other type of junction at the end of that edge. These rules allow you to enforce what should be allowed to connect, and then the validation is going to go through on the features that you select and say, okay, is there any rules that don't exist to allow these things to happen, or is all the editing that they've done correct? Does it all match the rules in this network? So for example, I could say that my storm pipes, my mains, can connect to storm manholes. With it, so all I'm telling it there is that anytime I create a main and someone creates a manhole on the end of it, that is a valid connection. It will pass validation. One of the little interesting add-ons to this menu is that you can right-click one of these junctions and say set as default. And what that means is that when you are editing and you drop a main line, it will, by default, get storm manholes at its endpoints. Whatever you set as the default junction will automatically be created. If you don't right-click and set one, orphan junctions are the default. Because we have to maintain that connectivity. We have a contract. Edges must have junctions at their endpoints. We will create these things we call orphan junctions. We've also invented a process called subsumption to get rid of them really easily. But that's what you'll get if you don't go and manually set any default junctions. Back to you, Kate.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. All right, in this section, we'll look at editing and analyzing your geometric network. First, we'll take a look at the editing experience that you'll see today. We'll also talk about editor tips and tricks. We'll go over tracing your network and controlling the direction of flow, and also modeling the cost of travel. So for editing, connectivity is maintained on the fly, which means two things. It gives you a rubber banding ability, which allows you to be sure that connectivity has been made to the correct feature. So I can move a feature to see what it's connected to. It also, excuse me, and there's also, there you also saw that allows me to move features logically. So when I moved that point, it also moved my pipe reshaped to maintain connectivity to the end of that point. You can see that when I demonstrate here. If I pull that middle point out, all those edges are going to reshape so that they match up to that point and maintain the connectivity. Okay, so remember orphan junctions and how I said they can easily be replaced. Dave said that that's called subsumption. Well, to do that, all you have to do is snap one of your features that you previously defined, snap it onto the orphan junction, and then the orphan junctions get subsumed. For example, if you digitize a new pipe down a street, but you don't want to put anything at the endpoints just yet, we'll put those system junctions at the end unless you've defined a default junction, as Dave demonstrated, to put at the endpoints. When you then put the valves at the end of the pipes, you simply create those features right on top of the orphan junctions, and the system deletes them, and now you have the valves at the endpoints. Okay, so now let's talk about some editing tips and tricks for editing geometric networks. Always have snapping turned on when you're with the right environment, so you can be sure that your junctions and edges always snap together and therefore get connected. You're also going to want to turn on what we call feature cache. And feature cache takes features in your current map extent and caches that geographical information. This allows our index, remember the logical network, to quickly read that XYZ information to determine if connectivity can actually be established. Again, we're skipping that round trip to the database by making that information hot and ready in the cache, similar to the index. All right, now let's talk about analyzing your network. To analyze your network, you perform traces which travel through your network in logical paths. You can perform traces to ensure connectivity, find upstream downstream features, or discover loops in your paths. So there's the connectivity example. Here I'm running a trace to find the upstream feature. There I've located some downstream features. And finally, I've located the loop, which is pink, and my optimal path, which is green. Components of a trace, there are two. We have flags, which denote the starting location of a trace. And then we also have barriers, which restrict traces from traveling beyond that location. We also have weights, which are attributes of network features that represent the cost of traveling that feature. We'll talk about more of this later. All right, so flow direction. Flow direction might be really important for some of you guys who are modeling the flow of, say, water. You're going to want to go in accordance with gravity, so you're going to want to make sure that the flow is always going in a certain direction. The direction that your network is traced can easily be visualized. You can turn on to see that you've set up flow direction correctly. There are two choices that you have to set up flow direction. Dave talked about the ancillary role. So when you're going through and setting up your geometric network, you can pick to say which features are sources and which ones are sinks. Then you set on an individual feature, you say whether it's a source or a sink, and then that feature becomes the appropriate type you want it to. Okay, so specifically, a source is where resources flow from, and then sinks, again, quite the opposite, are where resources flow to. The other option that you have for setting flow direction is based on digitized direction, which can be easier than setting sources and sinks, because as you can see on the screen, you can get into these weird oddities where we can't determine flow direction, and that's because there's a source and a sink that are kind of in competition to either feed or draw the resource on the single line coming out there. So be careful when you're setting sources and sinks. Otherwise, if you can trust your digitized direction, rather use that. And we'll talk about how to ensure your digitized direction is good before you create your geometric network. We'll talk about that later. Okay, so now we're going to talk about weights. Weights allow you to take into consideration information about features as you run the analytics. Weights represent the cost of travel. This is accomplished by assigning weights in the index to attributes on your network features. For example, the length of a pipe. The longer the pipe is, the more friction the resource encounters, and therefore it's slowing down the speed at which the resource travels through those pipes. So we would want to be sure that we select the most optimal path for our resources. Because this information is cached in the network index, this allows traces to get this information faster. Again, because we don't have to go down to the database. There are two primary uses for tracing: least cost analysis and accumulation traces. There are two types of weights that can be used, three types, double, integer, and bit gate. And now I'm going to hand it over to Dave to do some editing and tracing demo.
Did you mention orphan junction attribution?
No, I did not.
Okay.
That'll be you.
All right, so now this is a more thrilling demo than the last one, I swear. This is the editing version of our demo. So the geometric network, so the first thing I did is I actually, in this area, I built a feature cache. It's the thing we described. You get to it just by right-clicking right here and grabbing the feature cache. And what you can do is you sort of zoom to a reasonable extent, and then you click build. And then if you click this button, it'll flash it and show you what's actually been cached. Don't make it too large or else you'll crash the software, because there is only so much memory that we can allocate to building a feature cache. But if you're working in a generally reasonable size, 1 to 20,000 probably would be your top end, you'd be okay to build your feature cache. And all it really allows you to do is sort of, as you're panning around and zooming around and things, it's much more snappy because you don't have to continuously query back to the database. In this example, I happen to be hitting a file geodatabase on this machine, so it is relatively quick anyways. If I was to, maybe I'll do it later, put this onto an enterprise and version it and then try to use it, even though the enterprise geodatabase is on my machine, it would still be a little slower. By building that feature cache, you would just see some more snappy editing. So the way we edit is like everything else in ArcMap, in the geodatabase, is you click editor, start editing. Make sure you've clicked the correct geodatabase, because I have layers from multiple geodatabases in here, and say OK. So there's no raw editing tools for creating features that are unique to the geometric network. You use the standard create features window tab to create all these things. So for example, let's say I wanted to create a new main. I wanted to snap it to this manhole here. You can see that I've got my snapping environment turned on, so I can snap. Snap away. And then you'll notice as I come up this street, I want to sort of get in the middle here, but it's sort of snapping to everything. So this is our little fun general ArcMap tips. If you hold shift, it disables that snapping temporarily, or shift, spacebar. Don't know where my own fingers are. It disables that snapping temporarily. So if you were walking through, this example is not that good just because it is a relatively wide corridor. But if I was over here, for example, in this little tax parcel zone trying to create something, it would really be irritating as I'm trying to not snap to tax parcels. But I need that base data in order to know where my pipes or my lines actually should be located. So that shift can really help you with some of those situations. Just make sure you release it before you start putting new junctions back onto the edges. So one of the things, so you'll notice that after I created that main, because that default junction that I had set before in the rules, a manhole was automatically put at the endpoint. If I was to delete that manhole, what is left is this orphan junction. Looks like a white circle in my symbol. So what this orphan junction is, and one of the things that we always say is it's a feature class in your geodatabase. It is created with the network. It is called your network's name underscore junctions, or junk depending on which database platform you're on and if it's been truncated down. In that feature class, it is a real feature class, yes. Do not ever put attributes on that feature class. The reason for it is relatively simple. So I just created an orphan junction by deleting a user junction that was on top of it, a manhole. So let's say I came in now and I thought, well, I don't really want that orphan junction there, and I put an inlet outfall here. You'll notice that the orphan junction actually goes away, or not. Oh, what a horrible demo. So that didn't actually snap. See, this is why you always make sure your demos work before you present them. But say I was to put a manhole back there, which I know will actually snap and subsume that junction. What you'll see now is that the orphan junction is actually gone. It's been deleted. Even if I click that manhole and delete it, I get a new orphan junction there. So if you put attributes on the original orphan junction thinking it was going to stick around, it's gone. There's no way to get it back. So that's the reason why you don't put attributes on that class. Yes, it's there, but you should really be using orphan junctions. If you need something as a generic sort of connect-all, like that orphan junction, then what you want to do is create a subtype in one of your junction classes that is essentially your catch-all. And just allow that to be the default junction on every edge, and that way when you're digitizing around, that's the junctions that will be created. The next thing I'm going to show is how you get new data into a geometric network. So let's say, for example, someone was just out in the field and gave me back a shapefile of a couple catch basin leads that aren't currently in my network. Okay, so how do I get them in the network? Well, I can just click on them. There's a couple ways. You could use the append tool. You could do all sorts of fancy stuff to try to get it in there. Or you can use short keyboard shortcuts like copy and paste. That paste gives you an option of anything that's currently being edited for where you want those new features to be placed. So I want them to go into my catch basins leads. So I can click OK. And there they are. Now if I was to turn off where they came from, you'll notice they're still there. They're in the network. The other little thing they got was they all got junctions at their endpoints. What you will notice is that somebody, whoever was doing this, isn't very good at digitizing. So they missed. So now logically you could grab that junction and snap it to the manhole and say, okay, now it's connected. Of course, if we were to grab that edge, what you would actually see is that it did not snap. The reason it didn't snap is because that is a user junction. It is a junction in a class not owned by the network. We will never delete a junction that you have created or a junction that lives in one of your feature classes, unless there's a very good reason for it, which I've never been able to come up with. So the way that you would snap that in if you wanted to is you would actually delete that user junction that's there. You get the orphan junction. You grab it, and then you snap it to the manhole. Now if we grab that manhole and we move it, you'll notice that all the edges are now connected. That is what the process or the operation called rubber banding. It essentially just gives you the visual cue of were everything that I just snapped in there together actually connected? Did they show up and connect correctly? So in this case, they did. And you notice no matter where I move that manhole or any other edge connected to it, all the stuff that's connected goes with it. It's not, you don't just have to move the junction. You don't just have to move one of the other edges. Any little piece of that connectivity that you move, everything else goes with it. So the last part of this demo I'm going to show is tracing. So let's go over here. And what you will notice is, first of all, I stop editing. And I don't save the edits. So this is called the Utility Network Analyst Toolbar. You get to it the same way you got to that feature cache toolbar. Anytime you're working with a geometric network, there is two toolbars that you always want to have active. I guess three, really. The editor toolbar, the geometric network editing toolbar, which has some specific tools for geometric network editing, and the utility analyst toolbar. And that's the one that gives you all your analytics and tracing. You get to them all through here. There's our geometric network editing. And all the way down to the lowly bottom over here is the utility network analyst. Obviously, if you were working in a version environment, versioning toolbar would probably be a good one to have, and then that feature cache as well, just to have the whole sort of setup for what you need in order to be able to edit your data. So we look at this piece of the network, and we say, okay, I see there's a bunch of stuff. There's a stream over here on the eastern side. There's some housing developments in here with some manholes and lines. I say, okay, but how are things actually moving through this network? So on this flow dropdown, you can display arrows. And what that shows you is the actual direction that everything in your network is going. If you set flow direction by sources and sinks, then you might see some places like this with circles where there's indeterminate flow. We're not really sure how it connects because the sources and sinks were confusing. They sort of set the algorithm into confusion. So what we did in this particular case was we actually set the flow direction by digitized direction. So I knew that I always edited from my source down to my sink in every case, and I always edited in the direction that things were going. I've seen certain people whose workflow is actually to edit the opposite way, to always go from wherever things are ending up to where they begin, perfectly fine. In our geoprocessing tool set, we have this set flow direction tool, and the options on it are with or against digitized direction. So whichever, as long as you're consistent in that pattern, that will solve your problem, allow you to set that flow direction and to make sure that it's going the correct way. We also have a with source and sink. This is the same way that the core little button does it. And then we have the reset flow direction, which means uninitialize everything because I don't really know what's going on right now with my flow when I want to reestablish. I want to clean the network, essentially. So then if I was editing, this button would be enabled. And that's what you could use to set it with the sources and sinks. So in this case, let's say we have a little hypothetical scenario here. Someone down in right there noticed that there's a bunch of oil showing up in that river, and they don't know where it's coming from. And they would like to know which of these manholes is potentially getting that oil dumped into. So the way that you would do that is you'd use an upstream trace upstream, from that point, and you just click solve. You notice how quick it is? It's that quick because it goes down to the logical network level. If you stayed at feature space, it would be a little slower to do it. By going down to that logical network, we can bypass all that visualization and all the other stuff, all the other logic, and allow it just to rip right through. This would help you identify sort of all the different manholes that potentially need to go be inspected for where that oil source is coming from. We can also do the inverse trace of that. Let's say, for example, I know that the guy who lives over here is constantly dumping oil into that manhole because he likes to change the oil of every one of his vehicles, does it every single day because he hates the environment for some reason. So he drops that flag right here, and we say, okay, where downstream could be affected by this? We need to know so we can go and put some protective measures in place, knowing that we're going to always have this problem. So from there, we can trace downstream and find that we get to that inlet right in the river stream. Lets us know, okay, we have some idea of what is being affected. Obviously, this example is a little bit convoluted because it's specific to water. It's a little odd, but you can imagine how that could be applied to anything in electric, water, gas, or any other resource flow where you need that directionality to count, going upstream, coming downstream. And then we also have these ideas of these accumulation traces where you can actually, this one's a find upstream accumulation. So you could from any point find, based on that weight that you've defined, what that value is all the way upstream. Back to you, Kate.
Okay. All right, so now we're going to talk about validation and performance, which is going to include confirming network correctness. We'll take a look at the available validation tools and commands. We'll also take a quick look at programming and the API, and we'll finally look at performance. So validating your network means you're checking it for correctness, making sure things are connected or that they are connected correctly. The level of correctness is dependent on the method of validation you use. You can begin to validate your features right as you're creating or editing them. For example, you create a point snapping to the endpoint of the line. You can then grab that point and wiggle it around and see that rubber banding effect that Dave demonstrated. That's going to assure for you that your features got connected correctly. However, just because those two features snapped together and got connected doesn't mean that they should be. And by that I mean maybe there's not a rule saying that they can connect. So we have to go and validate our rules to make sure that they should be connecting. So with geometric networks, you get a suite of commands and tools that allow you to validate your network against the list of rules that you set out previously. Anything that is not snapped appropriately gets written to a build errors log that Dave showed us in the first demo. We'll talk more about these tools in the next couple of slides. The third method of validation involves running an analytic trace to confirm that you've set up the correct pathways in your network and that all your features are connected in an expected manner. We provide tools to do this. You do find connected trace, trace upstream, trace downstream. Again, since these are GP tools, they can be scripted and ran as part of a nightly validation process. Okay, so there are three command tools provided with geometric networks. We have verify connectivity, repair connectivity, and rebuild connectivity. So verify connectivity goes and checks the geometric coincidence of features in your map and then compares it with the connectivity information stored in the index to make sure that the two match. Repair connectivity is going to fix connectivity between your coincident features, helping to ensure the information in your map and information in the index again match. Finally, rebuilding connectivity is going to rebuild the connectivity between your features. So the verify and repair commands are provided as geoprocessing tools so that you're able, again, to script your validation process so you can, again, run it overnight and you don't have to take a day off to validate your network. Both of these tools take into consideration the full extent of the data set for the connected version. Optionally, you can restrict the validation to just the extent of your map with this new exhaustive option that we provide. The rebuild connectivity tool should only be ran once you've contacted support and probably also talked to Dave a couple of times over the phone. This tool can be time-consuming to run, and it cannot be undone. What it does is it completely drops your entire network and recreates it from scratch. So it's a heavy operation, and you should really talk to us before you go and do it.
The key to that tool is that when we say it drops your network and recreates it, It drops a versioned network and recreates it without deleting all your versions. So if you have 5,000 outstanding versions, you can't recompose back to state zero, and your network has become horribly corrupt, you need to run that tool. For comparison, 5,000 versions is going to take about 36 to 48 hours to run. So it does it in place, so you don't have to go and drop every version and rehoist it all, but it is a very serious operation, which is why we say that you should be talking to support and working essentially with me or with someone in support to get it fixed.
Yep. And all of these tools are provided as GP tools, so they can be executed in a batch process. All right, so let's talk a little bit about programming. You can get at a geometric network through the ArcObjects API. You are able to author your own analytic tools to perform custom traces specific to the business requirements of your organization. When you author tools, have them use the logical network whenever possible, again, because it's going to be faster than making that round trip to the database. It's going to minimize impact and performance and just make everything, your life easier, make everything a lot faster. This is going to bring us to our next topic, actually, performance. So performance of your network is going to be how fast things are, how fast operations execute. So while you're editing, performance is increased by two things. Connectivity is maintained on the fly because, again, that information is cached in memory. Secondly, by applying that feature cache. Remember, we talked about turning on feature cache, and Dave talked about it a little bit through his demo. That's going to cache the information of your geographical positions of your features in the map. To increase overall performance, please use less feature classes by making use of subtypes. Less feature classes equal less queries, which means we're going to save on time. The structure of your data can also impact performance, so be sure to structure it optimally. It's always also a good idea to prototype and test the performance of your data model. So go ahead, structure it, go in there, do some edits, do some tracing, and just see the field performance and how things are going. If it's not what you think it should be, tweak the structure a little bit and prototype it again until you get to where you think you should be. If you need some guidance, Esri Solutions and Business Partners provide a bunch of substantial models that you can go download and use as you would like.
Also on that, tomorrow and Thursday, myself and our lead developer are giving a session called Geodatabase Best Practices. And in that, the one thing you will hear us hammer on all the time is prototype, prototype, prototype. We can always give rules of thumb. We can always give guidance. We can say, try to lump things together, try to break certain things apart. But the reality is that until you prototype it in your system and what your map products are going to look like and what you're publishing and what you're going to consume through the web or where you're going to consume it, until you prototype that system with even a small set of features, no one can really truthfully tell you how well it's going to work. So that's why we always hammer on that when it comes to performance. It's prototype, prototype, prototype. And then less feature classes is always the best bet. More subtypes, less feature classes. And the structure of your data is about 1,000 times more important than the volume of your data. These databases can hold so much data nowadays, the volume really doesn't matter. But if you have poorly structured data, it becomes very slow, very cumbersome to work with, especially when it's being used to create map products.
So. Yes, very good point, Dave. All right.
I think that was my demo.
Yes.
That was my,
okay, so
my preamble
back
to my demo. All right, so this is the final demo of this. So what I'm going to show is some relatively basic validation workflows and some of the extra validation tools available for the geometric network. And I will give you one more ArcMap tip here for anyone who is not a seasoned ArcMapper. If you are editing, say for example I was all the way down here and I was editing this line and I realized I needed to actually be somewhere else, I could either use the mouse wheel to zoom out as I'm in the middle of editing, and that's not going to stop the sketch or anything else. You could also just hold the C and it turns on the pan so that you can always go further or wherever it is you need to get to in your map. I've often seen people, when I've observed people doing their workflows, who are editing a line, and the line needs to go off the map. So they will stop, escape out of that drawing, zoom out, and then continue drawing it. If you just hit C and then drag over a little more, the sketch will keep going. So it's just a fun little ArcMap tip for everybody. One thing I realized is that I got that build error table, and then I didn't actually show anyone the build error table. And then I realized that I deleted the build error table. In that build error table, one of the key columns is actually called error number. And that error number maps to an enumeration of all the different types of errors. 16, for example, maps to an orphan junction disconnected from everything else. If you were to Google Esri Geometric Network errors, or build errors, you would actually see the whole enumeration from our support site. Just as a helpful tip to sort of understand what those numbers mean, because sometimes 8 doesn't really tell you what actually is going wrong with that feature when you look at it. So now in this little scenario, I'm an editor, and I came in here and I just built this little extension off to this subdivision, or this little cul-de-sac. And I don't know if the edits I made are good or not. I can't remember. I'm just the editor. I never actually set up the network. I think I obeyed all the rules, but I don't really know. So how would I validate this? So the way I would validate this is I would just select the feature or features that you've edited. On the editor itself, you click Validate Features. Now what you'll notice is you get this error message that says validate features wasn't successful. There was something wrong. Storm pipes edge feature, the subtype of main, which is the thing I built here, may not connect to the catch basin lead edge feature, which is over here, via the storm manhole junction feature. So all it's telling me is that that connectivity may be valid, but you don't have a rule in your network that says that it's valid. So how do we know? So the way that I would fix that error is I would stop editing. Before I go and start changing rules, you have to stop editing. I've run into that one myself many a time. We go into the actual network. And I really hope I'm looking at the right network. We right-click on it, go to the properties. And on our connectivity, we remember that it was the storm pipe main couldn't connect to the catch basin lead via a storm manhole. Well, I say that connection is perfectly valid. There's nothing wrong with it. So I'm going to add that rule in there, go back into here and start editing. This is our moment of truth if I edited the correct network. We go to validate, and now we see that we get a different error. So we still get a validate feature error on the same feature, but it's a different error. So what happens with validate features is that it takes the selection of features, and then it goes through and starts processing all the rules that it can validate against. The first one that fails, it flags and throws the message up. So if you have multiple failures on the same feature, you actually have to iteratively go through it, check it multiple times, fix each of those errors individually until you're set. So what do I have here? I have the storm pipe edge feature. May not connect to the storm pipe edge feature. So this storm can't connect to this one via that manhole. So again, same process, we stop editing, go to the network, and we say, of course my main can connect to another main by a manhole. And you can see how sort of fine-grained these rules can get. I can say that this main subtype can connect to the main. If I now look at this duct, it hasn't been given that rule. It's not like setting that on one subtype in a class is going to set it to all subtypes. That's why this menu has so many little boxes that you can click on. I can say apply that rule and say okay. Go back to editing. Grab that edge and say, are you valid now? And now it tells me a new error message. So there is one edit, one feature, three missing rules in my network. It sort of shows you how if you don't really think through prototype and set up these network rules and all the different behavior correctly, you can end up in a state where you have a lot of invalid features, and it becomes a real pain to try to work through it all. So you really spend some time making sure your network is set up the way you'd want it to be. So in this case, my main cannot connect to an orphan junction. That's this storm net junctions class that I was telling you about. So that's this guy. And I say in this case, it's actually correct. It shouldn't be there. I should have created a manhole. I reread my little work order report and say that should have been a manhole, so I create my manhole. That subsumes that orphan junction. I now check that feature, and now it's valid. So now I've gone through that process, set up all the rules that I needed to make sure those edits were correct, and then allowed it to validate. If you select multiple features, if you select multiple features that aren't parcels, and you click validate, and multiple of them are invalid, so in this case there was only one was invalid, so that's why it selected it. If multiple were invalid, they would all be selected, and then you get into and all it tells you is a count, X number of features was invalid. The way to work through that validation workflow is then to open the table and make a sub-selection. That's what looks like a yellow row in the table. When you have the blue, that's a selection. Then you get the yellow when you click on one of the things in that selection. With a sub-selection in the validate, it will only validate the sub-selected feature. So it's not going to revalidate all 100 things you selected. It's just going to revalidate that one of the sub-selection. Just a quick little ways that you can sort of target which things you're going to fix. Because the reality is that if a rule is missing, you might have 1,000 invalid features, and then you fix that rule, and now you have none. Because that rule was what every single thing was violating. So looking at one of them, fixing that, and then moving on to the rest again gives you that sort of ability to go, okay, maybe it was just something I completely forgot about when I was worrying about this. The other tools that are available, if you select a layer in your table of contents, which participates in the network, you'll notice that a bunch of tools light up here. We have the rebuild connectivity tool. What this does is it takes an extent. It blows away the entire logical network for all those features and recreates it from scratch. It says, I don't know what's there. I don't really care. Give me all new EIDs, new logical network space. We have the repair and the verify tool. And these both, now as of 10.2.1, will give you this pop-up. And it's a big, long message. What it's really asking is, do you want us to be really thorough in the check? And in order to be really thorough, we have to constrain it to the extent of your map. Because if we did this really thorough check on your entire database or the version that you're connected to, the entire extent, you're looking at hours, if not days, of processing for one of these to finish. That is how deep and thorough these things inspect. So the non-constrained version is good to get a general sense of health. And then as you edit, it should really be part of a standard workflow that an editor edits, checks all their data, and this becomes part of their standard workflow. They verified the extent, because their work orders tend to be relatively small. So we can constrain it, look at it, and see that all of our connectivity is correct. And the last little bit I'll mention is that ArcGIS has the Data Reviewer extension, and that also can help a lot with data validation. This validation workflow can be a little bit clunky. It's a little bit to walk your way through it. Obviously, if you have a really well set up network, then the validation workflow like this even can be very powerful because everything is configured correctly. So you know when someone goes in and edits 20 features that all 20 of those features need to be valid. You know your network is set up really effectively. And that is it. Oh, no, whoa, sorry. That's it for my demo. My bad.
It was a really good demo, Dave. Good job. All right, so last section here, and then you guys can clap if you want to. deployment and future plans. In this last section, we'll talk about preparing your data for a geometric network and the importance of understanding the quality of your data. We'll go over the recommended steps you should be working with, the recommended setup you should be working with today, which is the recommended ArcGIS version. At the end of this, we'll end on a sweet note by giving you some insight into what's coming in the future, how we plan to support you guys. So when you're planning on deploying a geometric network, there are a few key things to consider. If the flow direction is going to be based on digitized direction, then you're going to want to make sure that it's correct. You're going to have to assess your lines to make sure that the digitized direction was correct. Like Dave said, it doesn't matter what way it is, as long as all your features are consistent in that way. If you're not confident in your digitized direction, you can go through and do some Python or something. Data reviewer to go through and discover what ones aren't correct. You can then use a flip tool to go and flip those lines and make everything consistent. Before you create a geometric network, you should first run your data through a topology to discover the quality of your data. Topologies allow you to create rules that are based on geographic relations. It's going to tell you how features should be arranged. Well, you're going to create the rules to tell how your features should be arranged. Then you run your topology, and it will identify what features are going to be going against your rules. So for example, when Dave zoomed in at that one spot where we had, I think it was a manhole, and that line end didn't quite make it to the manhole, you can make a rule to say that every line type of this must always be connected to a manhole, or sorry, overlapping on a manhole, XY coincident. If it's not, it's going to tell you that that feature isn't by highlighting it in red and giving you a nice table. There's also a really great experience to work through topologies to go and correct your data. If you're interested in learning more about this, there is a topology session that's given. Just search it on your app.
Tomorrow morning.
Yeah, tomorrow morning. Just search it on your app and you'll see the room. So if you're confident in the quality of your data, in such that you can trust the XY location or the XY position of your features, you know for sure that your features either fall completely coincident, or if they don't, they are all falling not too far off. They are all within some sort of small spatial tolerance of each other. If you are confident in those two things, then you can enable snapping when you're creating your geometric network. Enabling the snapping during the creation of your network means that any features that are within the tolerance that you define, say 1 foot, can snap together. When your geometric network is being built, features within that tolerance, again, yep, they're snapped together, creating connectivity. So when should you use enable snapping, and when should you use a topology? Snapping is a good option if you're confident with the overall quality of your data and minor corrections are needed. You're going to want to use a topology if you have no idea what the overall quality of your data is and you really need to figure it out, and that also that you're pretty sure there's going to be some major edits and correctness that is going to be done. All right, so deployment. Once you feel confident in the knowledge of the quality of your data, you can begin to deploy a geometric network. It's always a good idea to script the process, as Dave and I have been hammering on, prototype, prototype, prototype. If you script your process, you can tweak your script just slightly and keep running it over and over, lightning fast. When Dave was setting up rules, he showed you how to do it through a UI. We also have a GP tool that allows you to add rules. However, that GP tool is one rule at a time, so you're going to want to script that, and that'll allow you to give you an archive of all the tools in your system, and again, also be able to run it when you're prototyping and add them all again, instead of having to spend like 3 hours doing it over and over. Yes, it's also a really good solid idea, I'm going to repeat it again, to prototype early and prototype often. Once you've created your geometric network, again, test things like editing to measure performance and queries with the data that you've structured. Why is this not working? Wrap it up. Okay. All right, so if you're using the geometric network today or you want to start using them and you're an electric company or a telecommunication company, you should be working with ArcGIS Desktop 10.2.1. Again, this is just the desktop version, so you can move forward with other items on your platform like server. The reason why we ask you to stay on this release is because this is where we concentrate fixes. So if we fix a bug or enhance a tool, we port that fix back to 10.2.1. But for example, if you're on 10.3, that fix doesn't make it there. All right, so our last little bit, future plans, the exciting part. We'll be releasing a new framework for this domain called Utility Networks. This framework allows you to model at a very high level of detail complex network systems. It'll be service-based, making the experience seamless across the platform, in the cloud and offline. The first client for Utility Networks is going to be ArcGIS Pro, where you will be deploying your utility network from. When this new framework comes out, the geometric network will continue to be fully supported in the 10X suite for many years to come.
I need a job.
All right. We thank you all for your time. Please fill out the survey. It's a really good idea to put the 5-star option. Your phone is guaranteed not to crash. Anything lower than 5 stars, you might have some trouble with your phone. I'm, of course, obviously just kidding, being flippant, facetious. You can give us whatever you want. In our last remaining minutes, we'd like to ask if anybody has any questions. And, of course, since we only have about 5 minutes, both Dave and I are going to be at the island all day today, all day tomorrow. And are you there Thursday?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't get to go home.
So come party with us down there by asking questions. All right. In the front here.
You started out using the sources and the sinks.
Yep.
Can you run it that way and go back and modify and edit instead of going all one way?
So the question was, if you start with sources and sinks, can you? Are you asking if you can essentially set sources and sinks on most of the network, then on bits and pieces of it, set it by flow direction? By
do the whole thing and then go back and just make modifications.
Yeah, you can do that. There's nothing. Sources and sinks are just at the feature level, so you can always go in and edit them and change which ones are and which ones aren't. If you feel like that you need a source somewhere else to force something to happen, you can make it happen. He had his hand up first. But
related to that question, so with sources and sinks, can you actually change that attribute to alter the flow direction? So, for instance, in a pressurized system, you bring a pump online, that change?
Yes. So the question was, with sources and sinks, can you change that attribute? Yes. It's literally just an attribute. I'll bring it up here in a second. But yeah, it's literally just an attribute. It's called ancillary role as the field. And it has three options: none, source, or sync. So you could set it as a source today, and then tomorrow something else comes into the top of it, and you want it to now be a pull, and you can flip it to a sync.
I believe you had,
So the question was, with the trace tools, are they going to be available with the ArcPy site package? So I'm not exactly sure what that is, but in that tool set there is a trace geometric network tool which can be used through Python. It's fully scriptable. We actually wrote it that way specifically for that. You can even use it to publish through server and then consume it as a GP service. I don't know that it's possible, but it's permissible. The question was, I obviously give a cautionary tone about or comment about editing your features in geometric networks with code. The only thing you have to be careful about is the interfaces you use. So if you're comfortable with programming, especially the ArcObjects level, the only difference is that you can't use iFeatureStore. You have to use like iSimpleFeatureStore or iSimpleEdgeFeatureStore, things like that. There's just a different interface that makes sure that it goes through the geometric network's processing. But if what you're trying to do is accessible through that, then yes, it's perfectly fine. Yes?
When you use the rubber banding, does that change the shape
lines of the database? Yes. Yeah, so if you drag that junction and move it, it updates all the features. So it'll automatically update all those values.
But if you just hit undo, it'll go right back to the exact position you pulled it from.
Yeah.
Is there a way to programmatically change flow direction based on changing characteristics of other things in the network?
Yes. It's a low-level ArcObjects programming, but yes, there is. The GP tool itself doesn't allow you to like select some features and say these are against digitized direction, select others and do with digitized direction. We tried to do that, and it's actually technically not possible to do it in that GP framework. But if you're at the ArcObjects level on the iEdge feature, I think is the base class of it, there is a flow direction on that, and it is settable. So you can actually go to each one and say, based on this property, I know that that means it's with digitized direction or against or whatever. But it's always based on, it's always relative to digitized direction. So you just have to know, once you figure, I mean, at ArcObjects, you can figure out the digitized direction, read that attribute, and then decide at a feature by feature level. There's actually, up on the Esri Developer Network, I don't know, I assume it's still out there, there was a sample that we wrote in VB6 or something crazy. But it's up there, and it's fully transversible to .NET. You can bring it forward. Yes, you can apply multiple weights to the same features and the same feature classes. The catch to it is that any out-of-the-box tracing that you do can only leverage one weight at a time. If you want to have it do something and leverage multiple weights in the same trace, you actually have to write a custom trace.
Way in the back.
So the question was, if you have an existing geometry network, can you still create a topology? No. Geometry network feature classes are custom feature classes. They are a completely custom implementation. Once they've been made custom, they cannot participate in anything else. For the same token that if you had a simple feature that participated in a topology or a network data set, even though they're still simple features, they can't also participate in the geometry network because we have to turn around and actually change the metadata of the class. Yes-ish. You can publish a geometric network. You can publish the custom classes. Because as long as they don't have a business partners extension on them, then you can just use our software out there. Otherwise, the business partners will give you software to use in the web because they have special custom class extensions. But our custom class extensions, you can publish the data. You can consume it back. You can use it in a mobile client. I say ish because you're not going to get like the snapping and rubber banding and all that stuff. That's not going to happen. That's all written at the app tier. So you'd actually have to write your own application that did that. They're not terribly difficult to write, especially if you know JavaScript and stuff pretty well. But they're not the easiest things to do either. So that's why I say ish. So we are out of time. So thank you all very much.
Thank you.